Hi there, it's Jim Brown here with another Outrigged Capercast. This is number 20, and it's hard to believe I've been doing this for 20 weeks. And this one begins the new year, 2017. Perhaps we should start the new year cautiously. I've been thinking about poor Lance Leonard, the subject of the previous podcast, looking for whatever other lessons we might learn from his desperate experience. So if you have not heard the previous podcast, number 19, entitled Resilience, I suggest you have a listen to that before you listen to this. Remember that Lance lost his boat in the Gulf of Mexico recently through an unusual sort of capsize. It was not a flip, it was a flooding. And there were some details in Lance's story that didn't really come through, so I thought I'd re-examine. You remember, his crew woke him up after about 3 hours sleep. He had been steering for 10 hours, and for a few days he'd been 10 hours on and 2 hours off because his crew was unable to steer the boat. They had lost electricity, so no autopilot, and the poor guy just couldn't find the groove. And apparently he just did not realize that the starboard float was so completely flooded that the boat was about ready to roll over. So when finally he woke up Lance and Lance popped his head up, he noticed that the starboard float was 3 feet underwater and the hatch was open. He also mentioned that he tried to steer the boat around onto the other tack, but of course, with so much water in it, the boat was going nowhere, and so there was no action on the rudder. What would you do first if you weren't dead tired and you'd had a chance to think about it in advance? Well, Lance said the first thing he did was turn the sails loose, you know, release the sheets. But he doesn't say that he attempted to get them down. I think if I were in that position and I had my wits about me, I would first of all try to drop the main sail. The boat's going nowhere. Get the sail down. It's just out there flogging away on the downwind side, and the boat's already heeled downwind alarmingly. And with the mainsail down and perhaps the jib rolled up maybe halfway, but sheeted in a bit, it might be possible to get the boat to bear off and wear around. It would take time. You'd have to get tons of water moving. You'd have to give it some time and see if the boat would actually start bearing off and put her around on the other tack so that the flooded float was on the upwind side and on the upwave side. And no, I'm not sure it would work, but if it did, it would accomplish this. First of all, you'd get the jib down or roll it up all the way. And in this attitude, with the scuttled float on the upwind side, I think the boat would ride broadside to the wind by itself in a stable position, that is a directionally stable position, with the sunken portion of the boat upwind and the part of the boat sticking up above the water acting as windage to hold her across the wind, and with the flooded float on the upwind side so the waves were not continuing to drive the boat down edgewise, as was Lance's experience. Well, what else? Lance mentioned his skiff. He had a 14-foot, very business-like skiff for running divers and fishermen around. And as it happened, it was on the downwind side deck, right down with lashings on the side of the boat that was being scuttled. And Lance's idea was to tether the skiff out astern so that it would be there as a haven. He even said that they had enough gasoline so that using the skiff alone, they probably could have gotten up to Key West or to the Dry Tortugas. And in his attempt to unlash the boat so that it could be tailed out astern, he was swept overboard. And thanks to good luck, because the boat was not moving, he was able to get back on board, but by the time he got there, his skiff was gone. Now, if indeed, hypothetically, he had been able to turn the boat around to put the skiff on the upwind side, I think we can assume that he would not have been washed overboard, and they would have been able to hang on to the thing, keep it right where it was. So, what can we learn from that in 2020 hindsight? As Lance explained, the whole problem began with failure in the engine. The exhaust manifold wriggled loose and he patched that up, but then when he tried to get the engine started, the starter motor itself gave up on him. He was unable to get the motor started. So there he was with a very overloaded multi-hull, faced with having to beat to windward in order to reach shelter. And I don't know, maybe at a time like that, if you had an old boat and you didn't think it was really up to being pushed to windward under sail alone with a heavy load, well, maybe it's time to turn around and go downwind instead. There is an enormous difference between trying to get to windward and trying to go downwind. The stress on the crew and the boat is so much relieved by bearing off and heading downwind. Or, as Lance said, heave to, go to bed, sleep, feed yourself, take a rest, lay around for a couple of days out there if necessary. Perhaps the weather will change for you. If it doesn't, then work out another plan. Another enormous difference is made by the amount of load that's on the boat. This is particularly true of multi-hulls. When they are overloaded, their narrow hull forms are more easily depressed, and it also consumes their so-called reserve buoyancy, the amount of the boat that's available above the waterline to help it climb over waves. So when an overloaded multi-hull is pushed to windward, that is, sailed hard to windward, the waves passing through the tunnel tend to wet the entire tunnel area. A great deal of wet surface is created by waves that pound on the underwing or rebound between the hulls on their way through. And if the boat is overloaded, this problem is enormously exacerbated. So, as Lance said, you know, don't put too much weight on your boat. Well, he did. He says, I need my stuff. For his chartering lifestyle, he definitely needed to carry spares and so on. Too bad he didn't have a spare starter. But a starter motor is heavy. So this all says that if the boat is overloaded, don't plan on being able to push her hard to windward. Turn around instead, go somewhere else, or just heave to and wait. Or at least wait for daylight so you can see what's going on. Lance's crew may not have been able to steer well to windward, but if it was daylight, he could probably see that one side of the boat was underwater. Now, all of Lance's other cautions, particularly with regard to the EPIRB and a warm jacket or something like that Mustang exposure jacket that Lance was wearing. Even in the tropics, if you're wet, the wind is blowing, you're going to get cold. And again, the importance of watertight deck hatches. That cannot be overemphasized. Well, this is all Monday morning quarterbacking, and I'm embarrassed to try to say anything more than Lance has already said. Perhaps to make up for my pontification, I should tell you about my own lack of judgment. This one turned out to be kind of funny, but for a while there it wasn't. Okay, I do most of my sailing in my little Windrider 17 trimaran, and I sail a lot, maybe once or twice a week, year round. But it's no big deal because I live on a sleepy little river here in Southern Virginia, and I don't go far. If I do, I can't see to find my way home, so I love to get lost, but if I stay in the river, I can pretty much always get back. So me and my dog Abby put out here last week with a lunch and a plan to just go down the river maybe a mile or three and find a quiet cove where we could sit, have lunch, maybe take a nap. So Abby and I anchored in one of our favorite places. As a matter of fact, I call it Abby's Cove. And it was a beautiful afternoon. I was really enjoying staring at the outrigger hull of my Windrider and trying to imagine this project that I was working on, something similar in a way. And I guess an hour or maybe two passed while I was scheming away there. Then I decided to call a friend of mine to talk about it. And the talk went on for quite a while, maybe an hour or so. I thought I was surely getting somewhere with this project, and when I hung up and looked around, I discovered that I was well and properly stuck in the mud. The tide had gone down and really left me, you know, only halfway afloat. Now, this has happened to me before, of course, in 40 years of sailing this little river. I've gone aground many times. I can usually step out of the boat and push it around so that it's heading out, and then, you know, lift and push and maybe get the sails up for real power if the wind is favorable, or use my little outboard motor. But this time, well, I stepped out of the boat and went almost up to my knees in the mud. And when I began pushing on the boat, I realized that the boat was not moving, but my boots were going down deeper and deeper in the mud. And I had a heck of a time getting back on board. So this time I realized that I was going to have to leave the boat there and, you know, walk ashore and walk home. It was only about 10 steps to the shoreline. And before stepping out the first time, I had laced up my boots really tight. Then I checked the anchor. It was certainly holding. And my plan was to leave the boat anchored and come back and get her the following day by coming down the river in my kayak when the tide was high. I checked to see that I had my cell phone in a baggie, and I also had my little whistle. I always carry a tiny little whistle around my neck when I'm on the water. It's the best way to attract attention if you're in difficulty. And with all the confidence in the world, I stepped off the boat again and took one step away from it. This was the first time I had let go of the boat, and I realized that because of the mire that I was in, it would be difficult to maintain balance while trying to struggle to get one leg out. It was a matter of maybe falling down in the mud. The water was only maybe 8 inches deep, but if I fell down in the mud, I might not be able to get back up. So, with great good fortune, I made it back to the boat one step, climbed aboard again, and got my 5-foot-long paddle out of the boat and started out again for shore. I was able to use the paddle as a crutch to help keep my balance, but in order to lift one leg out without driving the other foot down, it took everything I had, all the strength in my body, to pull myself forward with the paddle at the same time. After about 5 steps, mercifully, the bottom began to get a little bit more firm. That is, I was now above the low tide line. So anyway, I dragged myself onto the bank and looked back and realized that Abby, my dog, was still on board. I thought she could probably make it through the mud better than I did, but I didn't really know, and I was contemplating telling her to stay, spend the night on board. But she was looking at me very anxiously, not wagging her tail. I called her, and with great reticence, she jumped in, and she began to come toward the shoreline with her 4-wheel drive, and she made it better than I did, but I think it took everything she had, too. She literally swam in the mud with her belly in it in order to get ashore. Well, we were both quite a sight. You can bet I was not anxious to meet with any of my distant neighbors. I left my paddle on the bank in the bushes where I thought I might be able to get to it from the kayak the next day when the tide was high. And Abby and I started through the woods. We came to the access road to a local farm. I sort of knew where I was. And when we came to the main road, I called Joanna, of course, and it was a while before I could get a hold of her. And when she came to pick us up, boy, we were both glad to see her coming. And I was able to retrieve the boat the next day without incident. So, of course, I've thought about what I might have learned in this predicament. Of course, the big red flag goes up, and written on it, it says, "Never leave the boat." Well, if I had called someone to come and tow me out, the water was too shallow for anybody to get to me. And yet I was 10 steps from shore. What was I going to do? Call for a helicopter? No, I had to go for it. But it sure is nice to know we have that option. Hey, here's to Lance and the U.S. Coast Guard. And so, if any lesson can be concluded from this episode, maybe it is that one would never leave the boat without being tied to it somehow, whether with a safety harness or just a line. If I had tied a line to the boat and carried it ashore with me and fallen in the process, I probably could have dragged myself back on board. And of course, the main lesson is that if you're going to go sailing in tidal waters and anchor, well, you better be aware of what's happening when the tide goes out. Okay, bye-bye, fair winds, and a good year coming.
Hang on, Jimmy. You've got to say something about needing help with these capers. I cannot stand for the way it's going, and neither can you. Your old audio editing program is going to drive us both crazy. Just ask for contributions, and see what happens. Go ahead, for Pete's sake.
Oh, Christy, I guess you're right. I've tried not to dun anybody out of money over this CaperCast shindig, but this free audio editing program that I'm using, just squirrely as hell. It's taken me 2 days to produce this 16-minute segment, and it's making me old before my time. Now, maybe it's just me, but I'd like to try a professional audio editing program. The trouble is that the good one you can't buy. You have to subscribe, and it's like almost $500 a year. But with something like that, we could take these capers to a new level of infotainment in the media. And there are a few other things that we would really like to do with the Outrig project as a whole. So, if there's a shellback sailor among our listeners who is in a position to throw in with us, well, please send me your phone number and an email. I'm outrig.org@gmail.com. We can talk about it, maybe get together and splice the main brace. Because I'm confident that we have the content here to make a nice difference in the public understanding of modern seafaring. And that's not all. We should also be talking about other things that really matter to us. But to make new things happen here this year, we need some help. And believe me, we would all be very grateful. Farewell.